Welcome back to the Macam in the Middle podcast. National break is upon us, and because of that, there is no football being played other than internationals. So we thought we'd get together, discuss the biggest part of the season so far, really, in the transfer window, the incomings, the outgoings, the rumours, what could have been, what isn't to be, and what could be in the future as well. Of course, January transfer window, about three and a half months away now. Already some rumours popping up about that. But before we kind of get into, you know, who has arrived, Michael, and who has left, obviously some big outgoings especially, it was shaping up to be a Sunderland transfer window that was going to be catastrophic, really. And then around 12 hours later, it had completely flipped on its head.
Yeah, well, let's just say the Thursday night going into the Friday morning, that was not fun. That was one where, and even as someone who's a big believer in what Speakman and Harvey, both in equal measure to each other, are doing, there was a point, wasn't it the point where Stuart, we knew, was going to go, which I don't think, well, I can only speak for myself, I wasn't too bothered about that personally. Then we heard Patrick Roberts might go, then we heard Jack Clark was unhappy, then we heard there was interest in Dan Neil. I'm like, oh my God, we're actually losing like half our team in one window, which sounds like an exaggeration, but that's honestly what it felt like. So yeah, it's amazing how the mood completely changes in 12 or so hours. And look, I'm sure we'll get onto it. There's still a couple of things that I wish we'd done differently in the window, but at least in terms of positions, without having seen any of the deadline day signings play, it looks like we have addressed the majority of the issues that were there. Time will tell with how good these lads actually are to what extent we've addressed the issues.
Yeah. In terms of the outgoings first, I suppose, Dylan, there's some that were expected to leave. Obviously, some of the players that left on loan. You've got Alex Bass, who left on loan. We're still a signing, who at the time didn't really understand. But he's on loan at Wimbledon. Joe Anderson, obviously signed from Everton last January, I want to say.
Yes, you're right, it was.
It was January. He's on loan at Shrewsbury, which seems to be Sunderland's feeder club at the moment. Obviously, Carl Winchester playing there as well. And Elliot Embleton on deadline day, moving to Derby on loan. In terms of permanent transfers, obviously Billy Wright, Winchester, both left early in the window on free transfers. Lyndon Gooch, Isaac Alhaji, Danny Bart, Ross Stewart, Liam Diaku, and if you want to class Edouard Mitchell's departure as well, because obviously his loan ended and never got triggered into a permanent. There's some, like I say, some expected departures there, but some also not so expected ones.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, as you said there was always a few that were always going to go. I mean, the likes of Dejaco, who, let's be honest, it just never worked. I mean, I've always been of the opinion that had the buy clause not been like obligatory, we wouldn't have even bought him when we went up, because he never really set the world alight for us.
Agreed.
Wish him all the best and hope he does well in Croatia and gets himself back on track, because he is still young. He's only 22, so we might see him come back around in the future and us let him go might bite us in the arse. But, you know, we'll see how that one goes. Same for Winchester, obviously. We loaned him out to Shrewsbury with the knowledge that he wouldn't be signing a new contract, so he's obviously played to earn himself his free transfer there. Embleton, obviously that loan came quite late, but I do think he needed it, especially with the people we brought in. I don't think he was going to really get much game time with us. I mean, and he's pushing on. I know he's far from old, but I mean, he's not like 21, 22 anymore. Like he's pushing 25. Do you know what I mean? And I think obviously, with how well he did on that loan spell at Blackpool a few seasons ago, I think the drop back down to League One with a good side in Derby, that should be good for him to try and get some more minutes, some more goals, assists under his belt, and then we can maybe assess that when he comes back. And then, as you said there, Bass going out, I'm indifferent about. I mean, he's really done is score that header against the Mike's 21. So, you know, I'll hope he has a good season. And Joe Anderson, I found interesting what Speakman said about him, because obviously, we've all been saying when we brought him in and he wasn't playing much, and when he was playing, he was sort of playing at left back when he's a centre back, that we really didn't know why he was brought in. But then I'm sure Speakman said the other day that they brought him in with the sole intention of bedding him in and then loaning him out this season. And apparently, he's done all right at Shrewsbury so far. So maybe he'll kick on this season and come back ready to sort of challenge for a spot in our team. Stewart was always going to go. I mean, obviously, there was a year left on his contract. It depends who you ask. Some might have been happy to keep him, have him score, I don't know, 25 goals for us and get us a high finish in the league. But, I mean, with how much we paid for him, I'd much rather just cash in. We've got, obviously, best part of £10 million, which is just an unbelievable return for, what, the £250,000, £300,000 we paid. And then... same with Hadji, brought him in for nothing, sold him on for what is rumoured to be about £4 million. And I don't want to talk about Lyndon Gibbs because I don't want to start crying on the podcast. But, you know, yeah, I love it. I love it. I miss him.
Yeah. And obviously, the biggest departure out of them, well, certainly financially, Michael, is the Ross Stewart one. And it was one that dragged on for the past kind of 6 months. He was leaving. Then he was staying, and he was leaving, and he was staying, and then it got towards the end of the window, and you know, there was a picture of him in the airport. People were saying it was an old one. Then it got told that he was leaving. Then we got told he'd failed his medical. Then we got told that Southampton pulled out the deal because Shea Adams was staying, and then he was back going. And then come the end of I think it was about 1 o'clock in the morning or something, he finally got announced as a Southampton player. And I think it is. Yeah. £10 million guaranteed is what Sunderland will get. I say what Sunderland will get. Obviously, yeah, Ross County get a percentage of that. But in terms of the actual package itself, it's £10 million guaranteed, and I think potential £2 million on top of that in add-ons, taking it up to 12. And when you consider the fact that he didn't play for us last season, really, he had minimal impact on the success we had last season. Had he played, could we have done better? Possibly, but that's, you know, football, it's all ifs and buts. Hadn't played at all this season and we've started well. To get that money for him and, you know, for him to leave the club isn't a massive deal, I don't think, considering, like I say, how well Sunderland have actually coped without him in, you know, the season and a half, kind of, since he's been injured.
Well, since the start of last season, wasn't it, really? I think he's only played, 13 games since the start of last season?
Yeah.
So, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not going to deny the fact he did make an impact in those games, because if you get 10 goals in 13 games, you've obviously done well and contributed something. But I think, I mean, obviously in the group chat, I mean, I feel to death for everybody else, because obviously I bang on about this all the time, but I think it just got to the point with Stewart where, and I think it was probably this summer for me, where I just grew sick of the saga dragging on about, you know, whether he was going to stay, whether he was going to go. I've heard about probably three or four different figures what he's allegedly turned down at Sunderland to move to Southampton. So depends on who you believe. But in terms of the fee itself, I mean, obviously, if you address the elephant in the room, which is the sell-on clause, I think that Ross County, if I'm right, if you say it's 10 million, then what Ross County, I think it's 15% they're entitled to. So that's what,
£1.5 million,
I think. So if that's the case, you know, if you say 10 million plus two add-ons, then essentially, you know, you're getting at least 10, you're getting probably 10.5 then if those add-ons are met. And for a player who had a year left on his contract, who has been injured for most of the last year, who wasn't going to sign another one, I think that that's pretty damn good business, if I'm being totally honest. I think when you look at, to be honest, going into the window, if we were going to sell Stewart, that's probably twice as much as what I realistically thought we might get for him. Would we probably have got that from anybody else? No. It's probably because Southampton have sold about 200 players and got like a £2 billion to spend. But that definitely helps our cause in that we can demand such a great fee. And you've got to remember as well, like, look, there's obviously a possibility he'll go to Southampton and do well. I'm not going to be revisionist on that. And I do like Stewart as a player. I wanted him to stay. But the fact that another fact you've got to consider is, and I know for a fact fans would have said this if we kept Stewart, where's the guarantee he stays fit? And where's the guarantee, if he is fit, that he comes back the same player? It's funny how not many people have mentioned that now we've sold him. But, you know, that is a factor there. So, I mean, like Dylan said before, you know, it could be some fans wanting to keep him, and I get why. He could stay and hit 25 goals, but you've got to remember, he's not back for another month, I think it is, at the earliest. So, and essentially, if we didn't sell him in the summer, I think we would have sold him in January, and he would have probably got 2-3 million at best for him, really. So, I think we made, I agree with Dylan, I think we made the right decision to cash in on him now. And you've got to remember, that money coming in will offset some of the fees we spent. Or if you look at it this way, that could be saved for January, or it could be saved for next summer, where it means we've now got a bit more of a purse string to open the checkbook with. And as well, last thing before we move on is that, you know, eventually with this model, people are going to have to accept that we are going to sell big name players. This is the first big player we've sold under this regime. But, you know, yeah, I'm just happy the saga's over, personally. I just grew sick of it a couple of months ago, and I'm glad it's finally reached a conclusion, even though there was about five or six different occasions on deadline day whether it would actually go ahead or not, which turned out to be nonsense.
Yeah. The other kind of concern that people have about the players that left, Dylan, is the fact that everyone with a bit of experience was kind of out of the door. We'll get on to the people that have signed, but in terms of the players we have signed, I think only one of them was above the age of 12 in Bradley Dack. The only one with any championship experience, I think, it was. And obviously, like I say, Danny Bath, who, you know, played a lot of championship football, a lot of EFL football, a lot of football in England, left. Lyndon Gooch, obviously been at the club since 17 years, I think it is, and, you know, played in the Premier League, played in Championship, played in League One, back up in the Championship again. Obviously, Bailey Wright, Ross Stewart, even Elliot Embledon, to an extent, has played a lot of EFL football. To have lost that much experience, not just in one window, but in the space of, you know, 48 hours, as I think it was, could become some part of a concern, especially if results start going against us where, you know, you might lose the next two games in the dressing rooms a little bit all over the place. Not having those players there could have a negative impact.
I mean, yeah, potentially it could. As you said there, we've had the likes of Gooch, who was probably the, in terms of who we had in and around the club, probably was the most influential, because obviously he's just been here for so long. But on the pitch, I don't think it'll be that big of an issue, because, I mean, last season when we got playoffs, our, like, average squad age was ridiculous anyway. So, but it's a case of, you know, who, like, in the dressing room and in training behind the scenes, are we going to have the sort of leaders there? And, I mean, as you said, Dax come in, who obviously Mowbray's worked with for a long time before, so hopefully he'll be able to sort of provide us a bit of a more senior head. I mean, I think it's a key point that Pritchard didn't leave, because I know we were all expecting that to happen. I was quite surprised when he didn't go.
Yeah, definitely.
I thought he would have been out on deadline day, especially, to be fair, I thought when they brought Dak in, it would be because they were going to let Pritchard go. And then, I mean, I suppose you've just got to hope that some of the lads who are like somewhat younger can step up. I mean, it might be nothing, might be something, but when Nathan Bishop signed, you saw a lot of the higher up players like your Brunos at United were putting obviously all these like goodbye stories that I'm sure a testament to his character and how influential he's been in the dressing room. So, I mean, I suppose it's that as much as older experienced heads are ideal, if you've got a set of young lads who've got their heads screwed on, who just want to get their head down, kick on, play football, I suppose it might not be too much of an issue. But should it not look great or in the first half of the season, we've always got January to try and bring some more experience in.
Yeah. Well, on the players that have arrived, Michael, because there was quite a few, in no particular order, you've got Nathan Bishop, who also came in as another backup goalkeeper with Alex Bass going out on loan. I'm going to try and do this in order of players that signed, actually, but this is quite difficult. Luis Semedo, obviously Hamia from Benfica. He's had a tough time so far, I think. Obviously, did well in pre-season.
Yeah.
Since he's played in the league, obviously hasn't scored a goal and been quite unfortunate. And, you know, you can tell he is a bit void of confidence. You've got Elias Mayenda, who no one has seen yet with his injury. Job, Jensen Sealed, Triantis, Bradley Dack, Adil Wachiche, Timothy Pembele, and Nazarai Roussin as well. So lots of players coming in, four strikers coming in, which, you know, was basically this the thing that was on everyone's mind. It is. That's what everyone wanted. And, you know, we've brought, you know, three out-and-out strikers in, one of which does have a little bit of EFL experience in Burstow, who was on loan at Charlton last season, scored a few times there. Obviously, Roussin, who can play kind of anywhere across a front three. So we'll get into individual players very shortly. But in terms of looking at the arrivals as a whole, granted, not many of us have seen any of them play yet, so it's quite hard to make a judgment on how good the business is and how good the squad's going to look. But in terms of numbers, in terms of positions, we've pretty much covered just about everywhere that fans wanted us to cover, by maybe one or two positions.
Well, obviously, one of those positions, the one thing I would say that I think we should have got is another central midfielder, and I'm talking like a Corey Evans type of midfielder. Not necessarily someone who's like 32, but someone who's, you know, had a little bit of experience. I mean, everyone in the group chat knows I've said Lewis O'Brien's name for quite a while, but he's got the Borough now, so that's not happening. But apart from central midfield, I do think we're pretty much, in terms of numbers anyway, on paper, we're covered in pretty much every position I can think of. If you talk about, is it Aouchi or however you pronounced it? Apparently he's a 10, I think, but can play out wide. So yeah. If he can play out wide, then that's a bit of cover in that position. You've obviously got plenty of cover in the number 10 role. You know, fullback, I think you've got 2 for each position. Centre-back, you've got 4 centre-backs. And then you've got, what is it? Well, obviously 2 goalkeepers. And strikers, you've got 4 options. I'll be interested to see when it comes to the strikers, do we stick with playing the system that we are now that we have got 4 strikers, or do we stick and twist and change formations a bit? But in general, those were issues. There were issues like of the striker situation and the cover that we had going into the window at the end of last season. We were saying that we need to address this. And as you said, without seeing them play, on paper, they have addressed it. But as I said before, we need to wait and see. Time will tell how good these players are.
Yeah. And the two names that, whether rightly or wrongly, Dylan, stand out is Pembele and Rachiche, purely because I presume you've played FM and they are names that pop up quite a lot on games like that, because, you know, they are two players with a lot of potential and have been talked about a lot for the past few years. Rachiche obviously played, you know, quite a lot of football in France's top division. Struggled a little bit over the last kind of 12 months in terms of game time, but, you know, I think they are two signings that, if they do hit the ground running, could be, you know, massive for a team in the Championship. And you see outsiders looking in, I think there was a, I can't remember what page it was that posted it, but they posted a picture of all the players Sunderland have brought in, and the amount of people that were quote tweeting it or replying to it saying, like, how the hell have Sunderland brought them in, is promising.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, as you just said there, I've been seeing the same thing, especially with Alshishi. Everyone, like a couple of people I've seen on Twitter, like how Sunderland managed to get him. And I mean, it's no surprise, because I know it's a bit of a meme at this point that we're just like hoovering up all these French wonder kids. But I mean, Alshishi has played just over 80 games in Ligue 1. So it's not as if he's just some youth team player who we're bringing in, hope he's going to be good. He's played games regularly over the past sort of 3-4 years in France's top division. I mean, as you said there, last season wasn't great. I think he only played 11 times for Lorient. But when he was at Saint-Étienne for the 2 years prior, he played pretty much the whole season, both seasons. And I mean, the same for Pembele. Like, he's played, I think, just shy of 40 games in Ligue 1, which for him is good, because obviously he spent a lot of time at PSG. Obviously spent that season on loan at Bordeaux as well, where he played the most games. I think he played about 26. So yeah, I mean, the fact that these two players have managed to sort of somewhat break through in certain teams in the top division of France, where I know it gets called a bit of a farmers league, but I mean, it's still a top European league, especially when that transitions over to the Championship. I mean, they've clearly got the quality, and I just hope they can hit the ground running, and I'm really excited to see how they get on.
Yeah, when you look at the kind of transfer fees we've paid for players, Michael, and I mean, Rachiche and Pembele, I think Rachiche was on a free, if I'm not mistaken, Pembele. There's been multiple different figures thrown around for him. But when you go back to how much we've sold Ross Stewart for, which, like I say, is a guaranteed 10 million, potentially rising to 12, that is, you know, how much we've spent on the rest of the squad this season. And that is what the model is about. It's about finding a Ross Stewart for, you know, £250,000, £300,000, developing him, selling him, to then sign 10 players with Ross Stewart's ability, obviously, you know, different players, different positions, but in terms of what they offer to their individual position, signing 10 versions of Ross Stewart for the same price you've just sold Ross Stewart for, to then sell them for another 10 million each. And that's, you know, that is what Sunderland are trying to do. And when you look at some of the players they've brought in who, you know, have already played games, Job, who's, you know, still 17, I think they paid about 2 million for him. You know, his value's already increased massively. His performances since the start of the season have been excellent, and, you know, been one of the best players in the team. And he's, again, when you look at, you know, Bradley Dack, Pritchard, Rachiche, players like that, taking him out of the team is going to be a difficult task. And I think that's why I think fans need to have patience with the strategy, because it will work. And when you do sell a big player, whether that next big player is going to be Jack Clark or Patrick Roberts, it is the strategy of the club to sell them for X amount of money, to bring in 5 players with similar ability or similar potential, to then sell each of them for what they've just sold Clark for.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously, when you took, this is a long-term thing, isn't it? And this is one of the things, and football fans, I mean, this is one of the things that really aggravates me, is when people just look at the short-term idea of the model, or the strategy, as you rightly call it. And I mean, look at this way. As a club, we've always been accused of being just short-term thinking. I'm talking particularly the Ellis Short days, and to a lesser extent, the Donald Methven days, when it was all about the short term. It was the here and now, without much consequence to thinking of that, thinking ahead further than 6 months. And don't get me wrong, to an extent, we do need to balance that with the short term need to get results. But one of the things that Sunderland like to do in terms of the good, as in addition to good players that we bring in, our characters. And I think there's a reason for that, because a harmonious dressing room with the right characters in can go a long way in football. Everyone, you know, look at the way when Leicester won the Premier League as an example. I bet a lot of that was down to the right characters. If you look at, and obviously I'm not saying we're going to win the Premier League in the near future, although that'd be nice, don't get me wrong. But if you look at the strategy we're doing, like you said, you sell Ross Stewart, you buy him for 300,000, you sell him for 10 million. Yes, okay, it sounds simplistic, but that is literally how we need to make sure we're sustainable as a club as well. And I'm getting quite tired of that getting written off, to be perfectly honest, because we need to make sure we are sustainable to the point where we're going to be a more attractive proposition when we do get into the Premier League and be in a financially sound, like more financially sound position. So, like I said, the club, I'm prepared to bet you, and I've said this to a few friends, that the club will be looking at probably 3-4 windows ahead of where we are now. They'll be looking to say, right, what can we do then? What can we do here, 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 here? And yeah, there are deficiencies in the squad. There are definitely things that the regime does that has its faults. But on the whole, Ross Stewart, as I've said before, is the first big player we've sold. And you could either say that's funded most of our business this window. And if you trust with Speakman and Harvey, the type of players they bring in, the quality of players they bring in, then chances are they're going to be, at least more than not, are going to be good. Or it helps us with future signings and future windows. And you've got to look at it this way. People might not like the idea of being a selling club. But let's be honest, unless you're like a Man City who's got bucket loads of money, and as much as I hate to say it, them lot of the road, you know, unless you're one of them with that sort of money, every single player in world football has a price. That's just how it is. Football, as much as being about the game, is a business these days, and you've got to be able to balance the two of them. So if people don't like the fact that we're going to be selling players, then they're going to be in for a massive amount of disappointment over the next few years. Like when Clark goes, you've just mentioned him there. I think if we don't get promoted, Clark is definitely gone in the summer. However, if you sell him, I've got no problem with that, as long as you've got a plan in place to replace him adequately for a fraction of the price. And I trust this regime to do that, because I think by now they should have earned it from the majority of Sunderland fans.
Yeah. And just to add to that as well, Michael, it's not just what people think about is, you know, I've seen a lot of people saying, you know, we never replaced never replaced Charlie Wake. But
yes, we did. Ross Stewart
The difference with what Sunderland are doing is they aren't replacing players. They're bringing in players to develop alongside them so that when they move on, you've got a ready-made player there. And that's what we tried to do when Ahmad left with Lahadji. Obviously, that one didn't work out. I presume it's going to be a similar case with Roosen. You know, if Jack Clark does move on in January or in the summer, you've got a ready-made player there as long as he hits the ground running, to then take over from him. And it's not necessarily about replacing them, but it's about having the players in place
exactly.
to take up their position in the team. If they do move on, they move up a level. Instead of being second choice, they become first choice. And then the focus turns to getting a second choice for when Roosen eventually moves on.
Well, exactly. But like I said before, like you've alluded to, it's long-term thinking, isn't it? It's a strategy plan. It's a succession plan with getting the next players in through the door. Again, as you said there, when Charlie White, we brought Ross Stewart in for 6 months when Charlie White was still going to be here. And then when Charlie White goes, Ross Stewart comes in and is a better footballer, as well as replacing Charlie White's goals. You then look at Roosen, or if it's not Roosen, it could be Achucci or whoever else it is, whichever other wingers it is, with Jack Clark. When Jack Clark goes, we've got someone in to replace him. Don't be surprised if we get a winger in January to then eventually replace Clark. It's, you know, or Roberts even. So that's the whole point of what we're doing. And one of the, I love the fact that we're thinking ahead in the future. It's being proactive. And it's one of the things that probably a lot of football fans don't realise, that actually, and again, like Joe Anderson, you know, we talk about him. Obviously, so far, he's not been able to do anything. But I wouldn't be surprised if he's brought in as a long-term replacement for Dan Ballard when he gets sold. You know, that's the whole point. So if you develop them now while the players they are replacing, or, you know, like succeeding, are still here, then if you've got long-term succession plans, and with the quality of the players they bring in, we are going to see, I'm convinced this will benefit us long-term. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But I think we'll be in a better shape for it in the next couple of years.
Yeah. And the last thing about the transfer, well, the summer window, Dylan, is not about outgoings, not about incomings. But also the players that you managed to keep, which is arguably as big as the players that you managed to bring in. Because, you know, you've got Luke O'Neill, who signed a new contract, Trey Hume, who signed a new contract, Dan Ballard, Dennis Sirkin. And then in terms of youth players, you've got Chris Rigg, who obviously, I think he's on a scholarship, so it's not, you know, a full-term, long-term deal. I don't think he can sign one of them until next summer. Zach Johnson, obviously another young player, playing for, I think, England's under-18s he's played for before. And obviously Tommy Watson, who was announced in the last few days. And that's one thing that will probably get overlooked, not just this window, but kind of every window, that keeping your players is as big as, you know, replacing players.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I mean, I think if you just roll back to a few years ago when a certain someone was just flogging on any of our youth players for whatever it would get. I mean, we sold Ballymumba, we sold Sam Greenwood, we sold Joe Hugel. I mean, it's quite refreshing now that the likes of Watson, Johnson, Rigg are trying to tie them down, try to secure their long-term futures at the club. I mean, Speakman said the other day, he said that those players are the future of Sunderland and we need to make sure that we secure them. And I completely agree. And it's quite refreshing to have that compared to what it's been like in the past few years leading up to this sort of this model taking over. And as you said there, with the sort of senior players who we've managed to keep around as well, whether that be through new contracts or just not selling them, obviously getting O'Neill tied down, but even just not selling Roberts, not selling Dan Neil, obviously I don't know how advanced the interest in the likes of Dan Neil was, but it certainly got rumoured. And I mean, as Michael said at the start of the podcast, it just shows how crucial keeping those players can be, because 24 hours before deadline day ended, I was convinced that we're selling half the squad and we're going to finish 14th and it was going to be the worst season ever. And then literally a day later, once the deadline shut, we've kept Neil, we've kept Clark, we've kept Roberts, and it just shows how much of a better position that puts us in, keeping our best young players in and around the club.
Yeah. And obviously, you know, January's going to come around, Michael. There is still a chance that, you know, them players mentioned could move on. But, you know, the window's closed now. The only thing that matters between now and the 1st of January is the result. Sunderland have put them in the best. Sunderland have put themselves in the best position to get the results. And I think it was Michael Graham that posted a picture of, you know, two separate starting 11s from Sunderland. And the depth that we do have, especially once, you know, the likes of Elise, Metete, Evans, you know, the current injured players get back, the depth that we have and the options that we have to be fluid in formation and rotation is promising.
Well, and especially when you consider Sunderland's luck with injuries, which isn't the best, as we've had last season's proof of more than anything, but also because of how relentless the Championship is, because what, and even in, when we get back after the international break, which, by the way, international football should be made illegal, I hate, but you know, when we come back after the international break, we've got something like 3 games in 8 days. So I think to have that sort of depth there, I think will actually be pretty crucial. And in games where you're going to get a couple of injuries, you're going to get suspensions, and there's a lot of games in short succession, the depth we have, providing the good quality, obviously, could be what wins us those games. And we can look back at that later in the season and go, that's where the depth comes into it.
Yeah. Well, that is that. Covered the window. Terms of who's came in, who's left the club. Obviously, still lots to be done between now and January. Lots of games to react to, lots of games to look ahead to. And I think this, after this international break, I think we've got QPR on the Saturday. And then kind of from then onwards, it's, you know, 2 games a week. Crucial to pick up points. And as always, we'll be back to talk about them games, go through what happened, hopefully look into what the new players can offer to the team and what they've achieved so far. But until then, we will see you later.
That's all, folks.